We're talking about the movement away from the Asperger's syndrome diagnosis and what that means for resources, what it means for support systems for adults who were previously diagnosed with this developmental disorder affecting social skills. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Asperger's syndrome is technically no longer a diagnosis. It's now part of a broader category of autism spectrum disorders. Did physicians label you a high-functioning type on the autism spectrum as a child? What has that diagnosis meant for you in adulthood? Join in on resources and support as you see them now, 800-642-1234. Rochelle Chaffee is Executive Director of the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin. Rochelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Glad to be here. Good. How have you felt over almost a decade now, seeing the term Asperger's fading away and it absorbed into the autism spectrum?
Well, you know, that's a really great question. I think to answer that, we really should dive into the history of how it happened. And we start at the very beginning. So basically, Asperger's was a term that was also given in addition to autism and also PDD or NOS, which was basically pervasive developmental disorder. And almost a decade ago, you're right, 2013, people have really been grappling with how to acknowledge certain historical moments that they now understand as morally reprehensible, basically. So Asperger's was named after that medical diagnosis came about by Hans Asperger, a doctor in Nazi Vienna. So as we become more woke, if you will, as a society, that diagnosis changed and morphed into autism spectrum disorder because of basically the origin and the doctor who named it and identified it and his sketchy past, for lack of a better way to describe it. So I think it was a very good call on the medical community, the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, also rolling up as DSM-5, to make everything be labeled as autism spectrum disorder for the future, just because of where Asperger's got its origins.
That's such an interesting history, and thank you for sharing that. Do you think, though, that this lack of a named separate diagnosis has had an impact on resources or affected research or treatment abilities, and acknowledging there that the word treatment also has tension? What do you see?
Absolutely. That's a great question. It's one that we talk about in the office a little bit as well. And you'll notice even on our website, we still do say autism, formerly known as, because what we found just in our affiliate in particular, and I'm sure the other two state affiliates as well, and even across the country, autism spectrum disorder, it really is a complex lifelong developmental condition. It typically appears in childhood. It does impact, or it can impact a person's social skills, communication, relationships, and self-regulation. But we do know that the autism experience is different for everyone. So it's sometimes more of a challenge for individuals that maybe have wrapped their brain around saying Asperger's as opposed to autism, because it's such a spectrum disorder. And there's some unfortunately, bias sometimes that can come with that as individuals grapple with their own diagnosis and what that means. So we even still all just at the end of the day, it's about getting treatment and services that you need for support. And we know that that's a diagnosis that's in transition for some individuals as they walk their journey. Sometimes it's harder to swallow to say I have autism as opposed to I have Asperger's. But our hope is through education and understanding, we'll eventually be able to leave that Asperger diagnosis behind and just say autism spectrum disorder, because that's really what it is.
I was wondering just about that, because there is no formal diagnosis now for Asperger's syndrome. Do you still see the term used, though, in the autism community?
Absolutely. And we see it in parents sometimes, speaking of their littles or their medium sized. As I mentioned, sometimes it's a little bit easier for individuals as they're coming to terms with what this means to say Asperger's, but we really encourage individuals that to stay abreast of health trends and what is being discussed in the medical community and what's being discussed and diagnosed in the future in the medical community is actually autism spectrum disorder.
Rochelle Chaffee of the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin with us, executive director, as we talk about, in her words, the diagnosis in transition, the former diagnosis of Asperger's, and where the challenges are today in finding support, in finding work and housing. And we're going to dive into that more. You can join in 800-642-1234. So what does work life and relationships look like for people who are struggling with social skills and this particular in the past diagnosis?
Well, that's a really great question. And I think I'd like to jump in and talk about screening and diagnosis.
Yes.
And just share some insights maybe to individuals that might not. We always say in our office, everyone knows someone. But if you have really not have that close interaction, we'll start with a little bit of education around that. So as clinicians use and diagnose autism, they can see that in persistent differences in communications, interpersonal relationships, social interactions across a variety of different environments. So it can translate to look like, and as I mentioned, it's a spectrum. So it's not a one shot size shoe fits all. It can involve being nonverbal, non-speaking, having an atypical speech pattern, having trouble understanding nonverbal communications, difficulty making and keeping friends, difficulty maintaining typical back and forth conversation style, restricted and repetitive behaviors, patterns and activities and interests. So what that can look like is maybe we call that sometimes stimming or repeating sounds or phrases, repetitive movements, preference for sameness, and difficulty with transition or routine. Sometimes that can present itself as being rigid or highly restricted, and intense interest and extreme sensitivity to or significantly lower sensitivity to sensory stimuli. So that's how it can manifest itself. So then when you take all of that information and you ask about employment or relationships, obviously having autism spectrum disorder has an impact on relationships or even interviewing for jobs, trying to find a job, trying to form lasting connections and relationships with people. It just individuals with autism spectrum disorder can sometimes present as different. So we know how, unfortunately, sometimes individuals react to individuals that are different. But the good news is we're getting better every day. The more conversations we have, the more understanding we have as a society, the better life, quality of life individuals with autism spectrum disorder can have.
Rochelle, as you went through a list of things associated, what do you make of the association with high brilliance, with high or brilliance and high intelligence?
So that's really a great question as well. I'm going to really defer to something that my mentor and past executive director, Emily Levine, said. She has mentioned in the past that those are wonderful stories, and that seems to be what the media does like to showcase. But we've also gotten feedback that sometimes that puts undue pressure on individuals that don't have that. That's not a given. As mentioned, this is a spectrum disorder. So autism presents itself differently in every single person. There's some tenets or threads that can be looked for. But it really does not, just because you have autism spectrum disorder does not going to mean you're going to be brilliant at math, or you're going to be a musician, or you're going to be an amazing doctor, which we know sometimes the media tells those stories. It's nice to have stories that are actually addressing individuals and including individuals with autism spectrum disorder, as well as other disabilities. We've come a long way. But we've got a long way to go. But it's not a given that an individual with autism spectrum disorder is going to have brilliance or be a neurophysicist or something other phenomenal. because they have autism spectrum disorder. It really does manifest itself differently in every individual that has it.
Rochelle Chaffee leads the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin as we explore the former diagnosis, Asperger's syndrome, and what that means today for adults. Join in on the social ramifications on verbal, cognitive, what research and resources have made the biggest positive difference in adulthood. 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show, back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the social and communication challenges now of what doctors used to label as Asperger's syndrome and how to find and connect with resources and support in adulthood. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Join in on your diagnosis, what you have found over the years, and what the autism label means to you. 800-642-1234. Rochelle Chaffee heads up the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, is with us for the hour. Let's bring in Kylie now in Sparta. Kylie, what is your experience? What is your story?
So, do you have 2 hours? I'm just kidding. I don't know if this was touched on when I was calling in or not, but in my experience, I'm in my early to mid 40s. And, you know, as a late teenager, I wasn't diagnosed until I was into my late 30s. And in my late teens, I unfortunately got the diagnosis of borderline personality disorder, which a lot of women get that diagnosis instead of on the spectrum. And so it took me, almost 20 years to get the proper diagnosis. When that happened, I was fortunate that I was at the time where the umbrella of autism spectrum disorder was being used. So I didn't, because I'm pretty sure I would get diagnosed as Asperger's at the time. And it's hard because, you know, as you grow up, you learn different coping mechanisms and masking a lot. And so, you know, it's sort of unfortunate because I can look like I'm not on the spectrum if you just meet me. And it's until you get to know me and understand me that, you know, you can see challenges that I have. And that makes it really hard, because I have, you know, some things that would be helpful, say, in the workplace, and in friends and, mm-hmm. and just being out in social. So, currently I'm going through a employment issue right now with some discrimination that occurred, and I can't say too much right now about it, but it's been really hard to find the resources to help me get through the process of filing all the paperwork and the legal stuff that I have questions on. It's been extremely difficult to do that.
Kylie, thank you for opening up and sharing your story. Rochelle, there is a lot to unpack here, and go ahead.
Yeah, so I was thinking, unfortunately, Kylie's story is not unique. Recently, researchers at Edgehill University in the UK found that a significant portion of autistic adults were not diagnosed until later in life. This group has been referred to as, quote unquote, the lost generation. Unfortunately, that does have an impact sometimes on the quality of life and also mental health outcomes. So this study, this mixed method study, which was published in the Journal of Autism and Developmental Disorders, just surveyed 420 autistic and typically developing adults about their quality of life and their autistic trait levels. And what the study showed to us was individuals have not received diagnosis for really a variety of reasons why they didn't receive their diagnosis in childhood. In some cases, parents were hesitant to pursue a diagnosis because of that negative perception that they held about autism. I think what Kylie mentioned is another reason. Some autistic people had lower, well, we don't say in our office, high functioning, low functioning. We say higher support needs, lower support needs. Hmm. So Kylie probably presented with lower support needs. So they were considered quote unquote high functioning, which really those individuals oftentimes slip through the cracks because they can do what Kylie referenced as mask. So they can basically, if you can imagine putting on a different face all day long to fit in with society. That's what we call masking. So, but that doesn't necessarily mean you don't get the diagnosis, which means you don't have access to the formal assessment process. Also, it's about culture. I think Kylie mentioned she's 40. Culture at the time between the 70s, 80s, and 90s, lots of these people were growing up and there really wasn't as much awareness about the whole spectrum. We weren't talking about it as much. And that really feeds itself to how difficult it is to still get a diagnosis, especially for adults. It takes a long time. There's not as much funding out there for it. And there's quite a few holes that you have to jump through. But it's really very important. Receiving that diagnosis is really critical to improve the lives of individuals with autism at any age, but especially for adults, because it has to do with mental health. And actually, I loved this study said something that I thought was really relevant for any adult that thinks they may even have it. It said getting that diagnosis with autism really can provide people with an identity and supplies a significant, a scientific explanation for their differences, which can really help an individual who might be struggling or can help them prevent from wrongly attributing the traits to a personal failing. It's not a failing. Your brain is wired differently. And guess what? That's okay. The sooner you do that, the sooner you can find your place and feel better about your place. I really do believe that.
Talking with Rochelle Chaffee, Executive Director of the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin. You can join in with your story, your support systems, where you found them in adulthood, 800-642-1234. Kylie mentioned the misdiagnosis of borderline personality disorder in adulthood. What other misdiagnoses do you see, Rochelle, when it actually is autism?
We see bipolar disorder a lot of times. We actually, especially when we're talking about adults, we've had so many calls on our helpline where individuals say, I know, but my doctor doesn't know. That's a real thing. Just as I mentioned, that culture of that time and doctors and not all individuals have a greater understanding of what autism spectrum disorder looks like or how it manifests itself. And it is harder to get a diagnosis as adults, but we do see bipolar disorder is diagnosed sometimes. What Kylie was diagnosed with happens often. And then there's even just confusion of, I'm not sure, depression. So we do see some of those diagnoses given, especially with adults on the spectrum. It has something to do with the age of the individual, how it manifests itself. And it's just harder to get that diagnosis for adults on the spectrum. Not to say it's not impossible, however, if you are an adult and you think you may have autism spectrum disorder, find your Autism Society, at least here in Wisconsin. There's three of us. We serve the whole state. All of us have a resource directory, and there's organizations and providers that have been vetted that have a greater understanding of getting that diagnosis, and they can help you. We can point you in the right direction because not all doctors understand that and give that diagnosis. So we can help you find the right provider to help you obtain that diagnosis, because it can be more of a challenge if you're an adult on the spectrum.
I would imagine, too, there aren't as many resources for adults than there are for children.
Right. No, there's significantly less resources for adults. And I think we'll get into that later on in the program. You had some questions about that, that you wanted to talk about. We find that America, the United States, has done a wonderful job at really trying to communicate, get that diagnosis early, start services and support. So there's an influx of financial information, resources and support for children. It starts to dwindle as they become teenagers. Mm. And we really see that there's a huge gap by the time they're adults for programs and services and support.
Let's pause right there with Rochelle Chaffee, heads up the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, as we look at supportive services for people who had been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome when they were young. Join in on your support networks today, or how you feel about this diagnosis, part of your history and story. 800-642-1234. News update is next on the IDS Network. Now to what used to be labeled as Asperger's syndrome and support and resources for people on the autism spectrum disorder here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last month, Sheila from La Crosse called during our show suggestion program and asked us to explore resources for the former diagnosis Asperger's in adults.
Housing is a big issue. If they don't have support from their family in terms of housing or financial support, employment is a challenge. Therapy is a challenge. There's availability for therapy and supports for children, but hardly anything for young adults and adults.
Sheila, we really appreciate your suggestion and we ran with it. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Rochelle Chaffee, Executive Director of the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, with us for the hour. Rochelle, you heard Sheila there mentioning the lack of support for adults and you know, ranging from housing to employment to therapy. What do you see?
Yes, that's an additional large topic to unpack. It's very interesting. I'm really glad that you had someone call in. We know that this is absolutely an issue. Just to take this one bite at a time, I was recently part of the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities has a Partners in Policymaking wonderful forum. It's 6 months long, and you basically get training, and a group of individuals is brought together. A shout out to the 10th class. I just have to give that a shout out to my group. And it's made up of a wonderfully diverse group of individuals that are vetted that want to make change. And this Partners in Policymaking class really identified that services for adults is a huge issue in Wisconsin and across the country. The housing is a challenge. I have an individual that I know she's comfortable with me sharing her story. She's part of my class. She has a disability, and she was living independently. Due to COVID, basically she had to move back home because there weren't enough services and supports and in-home caregivers to help her be able to stay living independently during this awful transition time. So there's so many things that need to be addressed here. And that's just, so COVID just added the icing onto this awful cake. So there's not enough caregivers. We find that parents sometimes stay home or they have to stop working to become caregivers to help individuals on the spectrum or even with other disabilities be able to sustain and provide a healthy life, which in turn affects the economy. There's not enough group homes for individuals that have the ability to live outside of the home, but they need some additional supports. We don't have enough homes. There's not enough places for these individuals to go so they can experience somewhat of an independent life and be able to live on their own. So we're really in crisis mode at this point, that what the caller identified. It's truly an issue. And I can tell you, just from being part of that class and being part of other forums, the disability community is really aware of this, and they're really concerned about next steps on how we're going to address this as a state, as well as how we're going to address this as a country. So housing is a huge challenge for individuals. Caregiving for individuals that have opted to try to live as independently as possible, but still need supports. There's not enough individuals doing that. There's not enough supports and services with understanding IRIS or family care. And it can be a convoluted, complicated system. So the supports that we do have aren't necessarily as easy to understand and process and digest and take advantage of. So I would certainly call this, what we've termed it, is a caregiver crisis and a housing crisis in our state in particular, as well as other states. It's something that absolutely needs to be addressed for the future. The caller is absolutely right.
I just want to jump in here. Next to the housing and the caregiving, looking a little bit more closely about the evolution of workplaces, because you've seen companies like your Amazon, like Walgreens, making more effort there to hire neurodiverse talent. What training services should companies offer, and what would you recommend in this area as companies look to go this direction?
Yes, that's a great question. And I think it starts with, that's making an assumption that the individual with autism has gotten the job. So if you think about at the beginning of the hour, what we talked about, some of the challenges with autism spectrum disorder and how they present themselves. Interviewing, that can be a challenge. Understanding what to communicate and how to share that, that can be a challenge. So after you've gotten through the hurdles of having autism spectrum disorder and you've actually got the job, which can be, to me, it starts with training and understanding, success in school as well as employment. How do I even interview for a job? What are things, how do I practice? What's appropriate to say? What's not appropriate to say? I heard of a story of an individual who worked in IT, and he got the job, but he wore the same pants and shirt and tie every day. That was his structure. That's what he knew. Well, that's okay. But for some individuals in a work environment, you know how it can be a challenge. So just being able to know and be able to say, I have autism. This is what I do. This is my structure. This is how I present to the world. Being comfortable with that, knowing what to share after you have the job. So I think step one training needs to be, how do I even interview? How do I land the job? We found that many individuals on the spectrum, that part alone is a huge hurdle to know how to interview and get the job. Then after you get the job, what are those social skills? What is my work family like? How do I engage with them? How do I interact with them? Do I need some additional supports? Just training. Organizations having awareness and understanding days to help individuals who are not on the spectrum or maybe not have interacted with individuals on the spectrum. There may be someone in their organization, in their department, in their immediate team that they may not know is on the spectrum, and there's ways that you can communicate or encourage them to feel comfortable, and just having that open dialogue. Those are huge things that companies can do. I wanted to mention a program in particular. There's a couple things that are happening for young people at WCTC. There's a program called Communicate. And I just love this program by Marianne Beckman and Jill Borman. And it's making sense of the hidden rules. And basically, it's a small group of college students, 4 to 8 at a time on campus, who learn tips and tools on how to navigate social environments on campus. That translates then to concrete skills and tips on how to have conversations with people, how to meet new people, how to advocate for yourself, how to understand what's socially expected and get the most out of college and then get the most and have a successful workplace. So it really starts, that foundation starts at school. It starts with some additional training so that they're set up for success. Employers starting to have those open conversations, teaching managers to be more open and understand how to communicate differently to individuals on the spectrum. That's really how we can set these individuals up for better success in the future.
So but really building involves, on yes. building on through the stages of life is what I'm hearing.
Exactly. Yes. Sorry, Kate. I could go on forever. That... I have to just exactly.
I'm going to interject right here. Rochelle Chaffee, Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, Executive Director with us as we talk about adults with autism and the former diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome and the different complexities of this in diagnosis, in resources and support, and hearing your experiences along the way. 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Rochelle, you know, the pandemic's so difficult on so many levels. I know some of your resources had to switch to Zoom, so many more people working from home. What impact has that had, do you think, on the autism community?
Yes, so COVID certainly made it more of a challenge on our organization, as well as we are certainly not alone in that. So much of our programming switched to virtual, which we had to do because we couldn't just discontinue programming. But if you think about social cues and you think about some of those things that you get in interactions in person that you don't necessarily always get via Zoom. So we're really doing some catch-up work with many of our families. We also found our call volume for our free helpline went up significantly, with more individuals taking a mindful moment and identifying, my doctor just said they think I have autism, or I think I need to get a diagnosis for autism. So we did find more individuals being more self-aware and being able to identify the differences in themselves as well as in their children. In 2020, interestingly enough, the rate of diagnosis changed from one in, I think it was one in 54 to one in 44.
Wow.
So that quiet time, actually, we're seeing an uptake in diagnosis with individuals on the spectrum. So that is an interesting thing that actually happened during this time. At least we were able to see our call volume significantly increase. And then we ended up sending out more new to autism kits than we had sent out in the last 3 years because people are aware. The challenge with that, though, is think about the issue with COVID and the I don't want to call it a burden, but it was absolutely a burden it put on the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're in triage. They're focusing on solving and taking care of individuals who have been diagnosed with COVID. And now we have individuals that also are, that's being on the rise as well, individuals being diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, which that number, as I mentioned, changed in 2020, is right during the middle of all of that. Mm.
Rochelle Chaffee leads the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, looking at their support groups, their educational programs, saying how virtual programming has gone along here in the pandemic. Join in on your services. Join in on the social and communication challenges that you've encountered. What resources as an adult have helped you or a loved one the most? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on The Morning Show for more conversation here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about the former Asperger's syndrome, a form of autism spectrum disorder, no longer diagnosed as a condition in and of itself. We're discussing resources for adults looking forward here in Wisconsin. Rochelle Chaffee, Executive Director of the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to James now in Wisconsin Dells. James, what would you like to bring up?
Hi. So I've been the guardian of my sister since 2015, and I've been working with her, being employed to work with her since 2012, and it's been, you know, a daily struggle to get resources. I mean, we just were introduced to a behavioral therapist in 2019, and she's, you know, been amazing trying to find ways to get the staff to cue in on some of the behaviors. My sister mentally is about like a 7-year-old. And so she learned from my parents that certain behaviors gets things that she wants. So walking away from the house, throwing temper tantrums in public, and my parents would just give her what she wanted in order to make her happy. And so finding an AFH or even a day program or a vocational program willing to deal with those behaviors is a challenge. During the pandemic, she had to move back in with me, and you know, we were on the search. I mean, we went through so many AFHs in order to find one that was willing to deal with those behaviors. And she is now living in Madison, and she's doing great. And the AFH there that she lives with is amazing, and they have great patience with her. And she has grown and developed into an individual that is very easy to work with now. But when she first moved in with me in 2017, it was every week she was walking away. Every week we were dealing with the police trying to keep her safe. Mm. And it was a challenge. And finding the right AFH is also another whole beast in itself.
James, let's get insight here from Rochelle, and specifically the acronym there in finding a residential housing, I imagine. Rochelle, is that right?
That's correct. Yep. American Affordable Housing. Yep. So James's story, as I mentioned, that's also not a unique story. But I want to give you some kudos, James, and kudos to your sister as well for really working hard. I know you all had to put in the work to find a place that would be safe and appropriate and for the longevity and happiness of your family. You guys did that. So that is absolutely something to celebrate. You should be very proud of that. Also, I am sure, as we've mentioned, the caregiver and house affordable housing crisis for individuals on the spectrum, as well as other disabilities. As mentioned earlier, it's real here in the state of Wisconsin. It's something that we have to address. Think about, just take a moment, think about James's journey. He no doubt had to make some financial sacrifices when his sister moved back in with him as well. That probably took him away from his potential career path or what he was doing. We also find, although there's funding for families, some funding that will help supplement the work that they're not able to do, it's not enough. That caregiving doesn't turn off if James's sister wanders. She just doesn't wander between the hours of 9 and 5 if she's frustrated and she wants something. So that caregiving that families give never turns off, if you think about that. Mm. And it's really a wonderful story that he was able to find a place, or the family was able to come together and find a place for his sister to live.
Do you have any tips for families trying to find local housing resources?
Persistence, persistence, persistence. Don't give up. Keep looking. I want to tell you all about a new development that someone has, the Goldman family has really spearheaded here in southeastern Wisconsin. It's a unique community that's being built in Grafton, where adults with autism and then college graduate students will live in a neighboring residence together. They're still looking for individuals to come. They have, I think, a few spots left, but you just have to keep looking. And then you also have to be aware enough to know what your rights are. So the Medicaid waiver in Wisconsin will allow families without means to pay a certain amount per year for 50 years so that individuals with autism can live in a semi independent structure in life. But finding those spots can be a challenge. You just have to keep trying. You have to keep researching. Call your local Autism Society affiliate. look in their resource directory, reach out to them, see what connections they have been able to make to help individuals. Hmm. But the reality is there's still not enough homes for the individual or caregivers for the individuals that want to live independently or semi-independently. There's supply and there's demand. We have the demand. We just don't have enough of the supply right now in the state of Wisconsin for either of those things. So James, your story is actually a success story in my opinion, mm-hmm. but it also harkens back to the reason why the earlier you get the diagnosis, the better quality of life you can have, because you can start those therapies. You can start learning how to interact and work with the individuals with on the spectrum so that they can have the most productive, happy life possible. That's why we really do encourage getting that diagnosis as soon as possible.
Let's bring in Emma now, joining us from Dunn. Emma, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Yes, I know that there are, you know, through the whole spectrum, there are people with pretty significant needs. And I know in Texas, there is something denoted on license plates. So if a police officer has to stop a car, that they know that they have to pay special attention. So I imagine they, you know, find out exactly what the needs of the person in the car are. But, you know, like I know that some people with severe autism have difficulty if someone commands them to do something. So if they can ask, so if the police officer comes up and says, can I see your license plate rather, or your license, driver's license, rather than saying, I want your driver's license or whatever.
Emma, because we're short on time, I want to just throw that over to Rochelle. Is there something like that in Wisconsin?
So we are doing some work with what our program currently is called Safe and Sound. And we are looking to launch a statewide program. There is a special needs registry that if your every police district operates differently, but we always tell our families, take your individual on the spectrum, start when they're young, introduce them to the police, go visit the police, visit the fire department, start to form a relationship with them so that your local dispatcher, your local police or first responder unit will know. Hmm. Imagine that translates to first responders, including ambulance workers or emergency vehicles. Those could be all sensory triggers, even the lights that are on a police car. So there's work families can do now to help their loved one be prepared in case they are stopped. Get an identifier on your car.
Rochelle, we thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Sorry I went on.
No, that's okay. Rochelle Chaffee, Executive Director of the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.